It is 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. G7 nations pledged to keep sanctions pressure on Russia over Ukraine. Speaking at the close of the Group of Seven summit in Germany Monday, President Obama said the G7 leading industrial nations have warned Russia to prepare for stiffening sanctions unless it fully implements a ceasefire to end fighting in eastern Ukraine.
Here at the G7, we agreed that even as we will continue to seek a diplomatic solution, sanctions against Russia will remain in place so long as Russia continues to violate its obligations under the Minsk Agreement.
The sanctions followed what the G7 leaders say is Moscow's involvement in the Ukrainian conflict and its annexation of the Crimean Peninsula. Regarding Greece's huge looming debt payment to the International Monetary Fund, Mr. Obama said Athens is going to have to make some tough decisions.
What it's going to require is Greece being serious about making some important reforms, not only to satisfy creditors, but more importantly, to create a platform whereby the Greek economy can start growing again and prosper.
He also said Iran has a historic opportunity in international negotiations on its nuclear program, saying Tehran needs to seize that opportunity. UN negotiators meeting with Libya's rival governments in Morocco Monday presented them with a draft proposal on forming a national unity government. Bernardino Leon is the UN envoy to Libya.
I am full of hope that this draft represents a fair and reasonable way forward that can guide the country's democratic and political transition until the adoption of a permanent constitution.
The UN mission has proposed a multi-part plan for a unity government to meld the two factions, as well as a new constitution, and plans for elections to take place after it is implemented. This is VOA News. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan called Monday for his country's fractious political parties to act responsibly following Sunday's elections that ended his ruling majority in parliament. Mr. Erdogan was hoping for a two-thirds majority in the 550-seat parliament so Ankara's constitution could be rewritten to switch from a parliamentary to presidential democracy, giving him more power. His Islamic-rooted Justice and Development Party won 41%, down sharply from the nearly 50% it won 4 years ago. And for the first time, the pro-Kurdish People's Democratic Party cleared the 10% vote count threshold needed to join parliament. Somalia's Prime Minister Omar Abdelrashid al-Sharmaki said following a UN Security Council closed-door meeting Monday that al-Shabaab extremists could be defeated by year's end, but he cautioned that dealing with the root causes that attract young people to such groups will take time. He says Somali and African Union forces have reduced the amount of territory al-Shabaab controls to about 20%. Meanwhile, the top UN official to Somalia, Nicholas Kay, lauded the progress made on the security and political fronts and attributes the success to international partnership.
It is first because it is a Somali-led and owned and essentially political process. Second, because it's the result of a unique partnership between African Union, United Nations, and the federal government, as well as the European Union. And then thirdly, it has been a successful so far military operation, although the military is only one component in a comprehensive approach.
But Kay cautioned that Somalia still retains all the problems of a country still coming together after decades of conflict. The Nigerian military Monday has begun the task of shifting its command center in the fight against the militant insurgency Boko Haram from Abuja to Maiduguri, the state capital of embattled northeast Borno State. The defense ministry has also announced the service chiefs of the four countries doing battle with Boko Haram are to meet Tuesday in Abuja to talk about joint operations. The Sunni insurgency, which began in Maiduguri, has been blamed for the deaths of more than 15,000 in the past 6 years. Pakistan's military says seven soldiers and 19 terrorists were killed in overnight intense clashes Sunday to Monday in a tribal region bordering Afghanistan. The military Monday said the firefight occurred in an uncleared pocket along the border in the North Waziristan tribal territory. Security forces have been conducting ground and air operations for over a year to clear it of local and foreign militants. Zambian musician Fumba Chama has been arrested as supporters of President Edgar Lungu say he mocked the Zambian leader in a song that police insist could provoke clashes. The song pokes fun at a man named Lungu, who, according to lyrics, carries a suitcase full of whiskey. Chama is expected to make a court appearance on Tuesday. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Tuesday, June 9th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Burundi's opposition rejects new election timetable as null and void.
What we heard this afternoon is not a proposal because we don't have now an electoral commission as provided by the law.
François Bizimana is spokesman for Burundi's independent opposition coalition, known as the European Union, releases millions of dollars to fund humanitarian operations for Burundi refugees. A U.S. congressman says divisions in Zimbabwe's opposition coalition is worrying for democracy. And the economy is expected to top the agenda for this week's African Union summit in South Africa.
It's going to take our will to fold our sleeves and work for the prosperity of this continent and total poverty eradication.
Maite Mashabane is South Africa's Minister of International Relations and Cooperation. An aid group says stunting affects nearly half of Malawi's children. And a new study finds a vast majority of the world's population has health problems. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's post and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A spokesman for Burundi's independent opposition coalition says the decision by the country's electoral commission to change the dates for national elections is null and void because at present Burundi has no legally constituted electoral commission. François Bizimana, spokesman for My Zero Ya Burundi, or Hope for All Burundians, says the election commission lacks quorum because three out of five of its members have fled the country. The National Independent Electoral Commission on Monday proposed June 26 this year as the date for legislative polls, followed by the presidential election on July 15th and senatorial election on July 24th. Bizimana said the opposition will agree to election under two conditions. One, there must be a legally constituted electoral commission. And two, President Nkurunziza must withdraw his decision to run for a third term.
Article 90 of our constitution says that the electoral commission is composed by five members. And now we have only three members out of five. And for taking the decision, we need four members out of five. The proposal made by our electoral commission is not valid because we don't have now the quorum for taking decision.
What happened to the other members of the electoral commission?
Two members of our electoral commission are not now members of the electoral commission because we have heard they are not now in the country. They have gone out of our country. I don't know where they are now.
Even if the Electoral Commission proposes to have the election July 15, does that satisfy the protesters?
No, now the President Nkurunziza could not hold a third term because our constitution doesn't allow him to run for a third term of presidential election.
So you are saying then even if the election is postponed and the president is still running, the opposition will not accept that?
Even if the elections are postponed, the president, Nkurunziza, is not allowed to run for a third term of presidential election.
What condition will satisfy the opposition?
The elections in Burundi can be held in two conditions. First of all, we must have an electoral commission in accordance with our constitution, particularly Article 90 of our constitution, which provides that members of electoral commission are five members. Now we have only three members out of five members. And the law which guides the electoral commission says that the electoral commission can take decision by consensus. If not, consensus is not there, the electoral commission can take its decision when four members out of five are present.
That is one condition. What is the other condition under which election can be held?
The second condition is that President Nkurunziza must withdraw his decision to run for the third term to be president of Burundi.
Do you think that the protesters are going to go back into the streets if this is not satisfactory?
Yes. If protesters don't have a response of their demand, they will again be in the street. I think so.
François Bizimana is a spokesman for Burundi's Independent Opposition Coalition. He was speaking with me from the capital, Bujumbura. The European Union released nearly $4 million on Monday to help fund humanitarian operations for Burundi refugees. The EU says the wave of refugees fleeing Burundi has been ongoing and increasing in intensity. Alexander Polak is the European Union Commission spokesman for humanitarian aid and crisis management. He spoke to viewers Jody Capua about Burundi's humanitarian needs.
There is a crisis in Burundi. You've got almost 100,000 people that had to leave their home and fled and left the country. We're talking mostly of women, children. And, of course, it has a disastrous impact for the neighboring countries and for these people, because the number of arrivals continue to increase. People go to Tanzania, to Rwanda, to Democratic Republic of Congo, and these people need really direct support. And we're talking here of the needs for shelter, water, sanitation, health assistance. And you probably heard, and your auditors heard, that there is a surge of diseases and epidemics like cholera. So this humanitarian support is really needed to support these people that had to leave their country. And again, I insist, mostly women with their small children.
Will the money that the EU is providing be channeled through certain organizations?
Yes, I mean, mostly these are the organizations working on a regular basis with ECHO, so it's the Humanitarian Office of the European Commission. So it's the usual actors we're using. It's usually sometimes the Red Cross, sometimes Médecins Sans Frontières, you know, all these type of international NGOs and partners we're used to work with in this type of situation.
With the latest contribution, how much money has the EU given towards the Burundi crisis?
We are releasing 3 million and we had already deblocked 1.5 million euros. So altogether, this brings the total of humanitarian aid for the region, because here we're talking of the Great Lakes region, to 52 million only for this year, 2015.
Can you outline the EU position regarding the Burundi crisis? Where does the EU stand regarding that political stalemate?
I'm happy to refer you back to the declaration of our High Representative Mogherini. She made through her spokesperson on Saturday. We're very clear. Situation is critical, and we don't want and can't accept the country to go back into conflict. So what we support, it's all the efforts from the African Union, from the actors, to achieve a peaceful solution to the political crisis, because there will be legitimate, credible elections where all parties can participate, only if there is peace, only if fundamental freedoms are respected, and these conditions are not met. So that's why we're encouraging all the efforts by the United Nations and regional actors to first stop violence and then go back into a genuine dialogue in order to find a peaceful solution.
Alexander Polak is the European Union Commission spokesman for humanitarian aid and crisis management. He spoke with viewers Jody Capua from Brussels. The 25th African Union Summit is underway in South Africa, with leaders expected to focus on security challenges across the continent, the issue of migrants crossing the Mediterranean, and improving infrastructure. Tuso Kumalo reports for VOA from Pretoria.
South African Minister of International Relations and Cooperation Maite Nkoyane Mashabane said her country has made all arrangements for a productive African Union Summit. Addressing reporters in Pretoria on Monday, she said the eradication of poverty is at the top of the agenda.
It's going to take our will to fold our sleeves, pull our socks, particularly our younger generation, and work for the prosperity of this continent and total poverty eradication through radical economic transformation into your own hands.
Africa is developing rapidly. The countries with the fastest growing economies in the world are found on the continent. But experts believe the lack of good roads, electrical grids and other infrastructure is hampering this growth. Elham Ibrahim, The AU's Commissioner for Infrastructure and Energy said this topic will also be given a great deal of attention as part of the AU's new Partnership for Africa's Development, NEPAD, Economic Cooperation Program.
We have a permanent session in every summit for the NEPAD, where infrastructure is considered, and also for the Presidential Infrastructure Championing Initiative.
Political unrest in Burundi and the war in Sudan will be discussed, and leaders will also take a closer look at the continued threat of terrorism in countries like Kenya, Nigeria, and Somalia. With thousands of African migrants losing their lives in the Mediterranean Sea while trying to reach greener pastures in Europe, issues of migration will also feature on the agenda. Officials will discuss the continent's position on proposed changes at the United Nations, paying particular attention to the role and level of representation of African states in the UN system. Minister Mashabane denied allegations that some African countries were boycotting the summit because of recent xenophobic violence that took place in South Africa.
We have received confirmation that all AU member states will be represented. Majority of the heads of states would be attending. So there is no boycotting of the African Union summit in South Africa.
The summit ends with heads of state meetings on June 14th and 15th. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Pretoria.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, June 9th. Daybreak Africa time is 17 minutes past the hour. U.S. Congressman Chris Smith, chairman of the Subcommittee on Africa, Global Health, Global Human Rights and International Organization, says divisions in Zimbabwe's opposition are not good for the movement's fight for change in the country. Untungamile Nkomo of VOA Zimbabwe Service reports.
Speaking after a congressional hearing on the future of the U.S.-Zimbabwe relations last week, Mr. Smith said the United States is concerned about factionalism tearing the opposition apart. Instead of splintering, Congressman Smith says opposition voices must close ranks and speak with one voice for the advancement of democracy in Zimbabwe.
We're hoping that the opposition will speak out, solidify, you know, come to a joint vision for Zimbabwe, because the people deserve better than what they have now, that's for sure.
The congressman added that while the United States does not take political sides, a divided opposition puts Washington in an awkward position.
It does put the U.S. in a difficult situation. We don't pick winners or losers. We just don't. You know, it's up to the people of Zimbabwe to do that. But we hope that people who really espouse to true human rights observance will be smart and solidify, you know, rally, become a real potent force for good.
The official opposition movement for democratic change has over the years splintered into many formations, with the latest being the split of the Renewal faction due to power struggles. Political analyst Dr. Brilliant Mhlanga says he agrees with Congressman Smith.
It makes a lot of sense. In fact, we have said it, that the opposition must try to find a kind of coalescence of effort, meeting ground. It's natural that human beings will always have differences, but there should all obviously be a reason why they should come together given a situation like that. But then the other problem is the one that a critical mind should raise regarding the interest America has in sounding so worried about such a situation.
But ZANU-PF leaning analyst Morris Ngwenya has a different take. He says divisions in the opposition are justified as the parties are pushing a foreign agenda to remove ZANU-PF from power. Reporting for VOA Studio 7 in Washington, I'm Tungamile Nkomo.
Stunted growth caused by malnutrition affects as many as 50% of children in Malawi. There's no cure for stunted, which can cause developmental and physical problems, but good nutrition from an early age can easily prevent it. A program led by the Children's Investment Fund Foundation and World Food Program is trying to provide that nutrition to Malawian children. VOA's Anita Powell talks to project coordinator Georgina Fikiti via Skype from Malawi.
Thanks for talking to us, Georgina. Can you tell us what this project is all about?
I'm in Malawi this week with a team, and we're working with the World Food Programme, the UN World Food Programme, to support the government of Malawi to address undernutrition. So nutrition matters in Malawi for children's growth, not only for their physical growth, to ensure that they grow tall and strong in teenagers and then become strong adults, but also the development of their brains. And this is really important. We see this as a really important issue because if we don't address good nutrition, we're stealing futures by holding children back.
So how big of a problem are malnutrition and stunting in Malawi?
Malawi has very high rates of stunting, so short height for age. It's almost half of children are stunted, and around 1 million, that's 1.4 million of children in Malawi. So it's a huge burden that exists in Malawi. 18% of school year repetitions are due to stunting, and children who are stunted are more likely to drop out of school. If you look at the recent report that was issued, we see that undernutrition is costing countries like Malawi a huge amount. So annually, it's around $600 million, which is around 10% of GDP, which is enormous.
What kind of results are you seeing with your supplemental feeding program and educational programs?
So we've reached, or the program through the World Food Program, working with World Vision and the government in the Nchisi district, has reached 25,000 participants, which is on the way to the target. The four-year program will reach around 66,000 participants. And we're seeing a really great participation rate, which is well above 80%, so that's on target as well. It's really positive. Those results haven't yet come out, but one more thing I wanted to demonstrate was while the product is helping to increase dietary diversity, it's actually increasing roughly, and this is what we heard, three times.
That was Georgina Fikiti of the Children's Investment Fund was speaking to reporter Anita Powell from Malawi. The older a person gets, the more medical conditions that person often has. In fact, a new global analysis of ill health and disability found the average older adult suffered from at least five non-life-threatening health ailments in 2013. Viewer's Jessica Berman has more.
More than 95% of the world's population has health problems. That's according to a detailed report called the Global Burden of Disease Study. It found that one-third of the world, or 2.3 billion people, live with multiple health ailments, many of which contribute to disability but not death. Teo Voss, a professor of global health at the University of Washington's Institute of Health Metrics and Evaluation, led the study. Voss says the most common causes of disability were largely age-related.
Across the world, the two largest components are the musculoskeletal problems, with low back pain, neck pain, and arthritis being very dominant, and then the mental disorders, where depression and anxiety are the biggest one contributing to the amounts of disability.
Also prominent as causes of disability in older age were iron deficiency, anemia, drug and alcohol abuse, hearing loss, and dental problems. The study, published in the journal The Lancet, analyzed more than 35,000 pieces of information on disease and injury from 188 countries between 1990 and 2013. In sub-Saharan Africa, complications related to HIV/AIDS were a key driver of disability in recent times. Voss says Asian countries had the least amount of disability.
So China, Japan, Thailand, Indonesia, Singapore, they have relatively lower rates of disability. And whether that is due to more prudent lifestyles in terms of diet, less obesity, that is not so clear.
Given their toll on healthcare systems and quality of life, Voss says preventable causes of poor health have not received the societal attention they deserve. Voss says it's important not only to keep people alive into old age, but for them to remain healthy. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
It's 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Marco Woma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with athletics. South Africa's Hendrico Branches and Antonio Alcana, along with Morocco's Hicham Singweni, triumphed in lifetime bests at the José Odlozil Memorial Meet in Prague in the Czech Republic on Monday night. Branches clocked 10.06 seconds in 100 meters. Alcana won the 110-meter hurdles in 13.42 seconds, while Singweni prevailed in 3,000-meter steeplechase in 8 minutes and 21.10 seconds. All three qualify for the World Athletics Championships due in Beijing, China, in August. South African Wenda Nell and Ethiopian Buse Deriba won women's 400-meter hurdles and 3,000 meters, respectively. Turning to football, lethal striker Gael Nganamoit scored a hat-trick as Cameroon went on the rampage to thrash Ecuador 6-0 at the FIFA Women's World Cup in Vancouver, Canada on Monday night. Earlier on, African champions Nigeria Super Falcons fought hard from a 2-0 deficit to hold Sweden to a 3-all draw in Winnipeg. Nigerian striker Ngozi Okoba was voted player of the match. Meanwhile, in men's football, hosts Egypt edged Malawi 2-1 as Ghana pipped visitors Togo 1-0. Today, Tuesday, Uganda host Gabon as the Democratic Republic of Congo face Cameroon. Elsewhere, Egyptian defending champions El Ahly pipped Tunisia's Club Africains 5-4 in a post-match penalty shootout to advance to the group stage in the Orange Africa Confederations Cup. The two sides were tied 3-all on aggregate at the end of the return leg in Tunis. Tunisia's Etoile du Sahel dismissed Morocco's Raja Casablanca 5-0 on aggregate. Egypt's Zamalek beat the Democratic Republic of Congo's Sanga Balende 3-1. Mali's Stade Malien edged out the Democratic Republic of Congo's AS Vita 4-3. Tunisia's CS Sfaxien outplayed Ivory Coast's ASEC Mimosa 3-1. Republic of Congo's AC Leopards edged out Nigeria's Warri Wolves 4-3 as South Africa's Orlando Pirates beat Guinea's AS Kaluma 6-1 and Tunisia's Esperance outplayed Ghana's Heart of Oak 5-1 on aggregate. Consequently, El Ahly, Etoile du Sahel, Esperance and Stade Malien are in Group A for their mini-league contest. Group B consists of AC Leopards, CS Sfaxien, Orlando Pirates and Zamalek. Finally, in Switzerland, Madagascar is the world's most improved team, while Guinea-Bissau has slipped by the widest margin among Africans, according to the FIFA rankings released in Zurich. Ranked 21st, Algeria is Africa's highest placed team. African champions Ivory Coast are 24th, Tunisia 29th, Ghana 34th, Senegal 36th, Cape Verde Islands 38th, Nigeria 43rd, Guinea 45th, and Republic of Congo 47th. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Our listener mail for this Tuesday morning comes from Ambrose Adjo of Makurdi in Benin State, Nigeria. He says, "Dear VOA, in the aftermath of the current mix-up between Amnesty International and the Nigerian military over the handling of the suspected members of the violent extremist group Boko Haram, it seems to have dawned on me that the global watchdog, like any individual, organization or government, does not stand foolproof. I think a reconciliation of differences by both parties should be considered as appropriate so as not to allow negative reaction affect the effort of the Nigerian government and its partners to face the challenge with the seriousness it deserves." We thank you, Ambrose Adjo of Makurdi in Benin State, Nigeria, for your comment. And that's it for this Tuesday, June 9th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, hoping that all of you in Africa will have a very good day.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
When news is happening, VOA Africa is there.
Mohamed Yusuf of VOA News, Nairobi.
Victor Beatty, VOA News, Washington.
Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Joba.
Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
VOA correspondents take you right to the center of events as they're happening. And this is where you hear it all on VOA Africa.